the offside rule. We get it. Brought to you by a Wolves fan, a Manchester United fan, and a Liverpool fan.
Hello and welcome to the Offside Rule podcast. We get it. We've got it all season and we're coming to the end to round up a truly spectacular whole season's worth of podcasts with myself, Hayley McQueen, Kate Borsay, and Lindsay Hooper. Hi, girls.
Hello.
I sound a bit Scottish.
Hello.
Hello, how are you doing?
Oh, hi there, now.
You sound like, if you're at home listening, Lindsay's doing a really enthusiastic large wave. Hello! You know, like I'm up. No.
Kids TV presenter.
Yeah, exactly. She's only sat a mere half metre away from Hayley, but we can definitely see she means hello.
She does. So, hi there, everyone. Thank you very much for listening and downloading.
I don't know where I got that energy from. It should have been a hi. The season's nearly over.
Thank God for that. Yeah, I mean, the season is over, isn't it? In some leagues, but we're still battling on in the Premier League. There's playoffs to be decided as well as we record this. So we're going to go off kind of current topics a little bit, because in case you're downloading this a few days after something happens that we don't expect, we don't sound too stupid. But we will be talking about stupid things that have happened this season, amongst others. So we've got lots to talk about. We'll also be hearing from Sue Smith, who'll be rounding up, of course, huge game at Wembley at the weekend as Manchester City won the Women's FA Cup, beating Birmingham. You were there, Kate, weren't you? Four different scorers as well for City.
Yeah, it was a great game, actually. I mean, Birmingham were overrun by City. They just couldn't hang on to the possession. And City were brilliant. But four different scorers, including Carly Lloyd, World Football of the Year. And actually, I took my daughter, who's seven, and her mate. And my daughter remembered Carly Lloyd and actually kept sort of asking about her. So you can say what you like about bringing in foreign players and the fact that she really is just a glory buy or a glory loan, isn't she, Carly Lloyd, into Manchester City Women. But it's interesting how she's peaked. Even my daughter, who's honestly not that into football, even though she's been to loads of games, she's clearly piqued their interest.
Yeah, so it's working. Right, well, we're going to be summing up the good and the bad of everything that's happened this season. I put a tweet out, so if you did tweet me and you're listening to this, I'm pretty much going to read them all out. So you've done my research for me. Thank you very much for that. So just some of the small stories that maybe went unnoticed with you know, kind gestures from fans, or maybe things that did go noticed that you just want to remind us of. We're also going to be looking at Mumsnet, aren't we, girls? It's a website for parents, by parents, and the normally people exchanging kind of advice about what to do when you're a new mum or you're an experienced mum or a dad and you're trying to figure out how the hell to keep these things alive. Children, I mean.
One of us reads it more than the other two.
Yeah, that's true.
I've never been on it, but I heard it's good.
It's okay. I mean, people do go on there to release anger in situations, and there's a whole thread called AIBU, which is all new to me.
What does that stand for?
It basically stands for Am I Being Unreasonable? And then people reply with YWBU or YWNBU. You were being unreasonable, or you were not being unreasonable. If you haven't switched off by now...
It sounds rather confusing to me. They need to do a different one to you were or you weren't.
But I did happen to come across quite a funny post about relegation, bizarrely. Football has hit Mumsnet Towers. So we're going to be discussing that.
Yeah, it's very, very funny. So stay tuned. That'll be the final topic where you can either laugh along with us or cry like those who were relegated.
The Offside Rule, we get it. The female take on football.
Anyway, what about footballers having dreams of playing for other clubs and it didn't quite work out? Well, we came up with this topic because Stevie Mellon was a subject of a misdirected bid from Barnsley. Okay, so Barnsley sent a bid to St Mirren, and what did they do? They got the wrong email address. Not just that, they sent the bid and the information to the fan site by error. So all the fans there thinking, oh, look, this has got to be some kind of joke. No, it wasn't a joke. It came from the official email of Barnsley or whomever it was that was making sure that they were going to sign this player and get a bit more information. So we're going to have a look at some other things that have happened, miscommunications or transfers or just kind of random things that you didn't really expect in football.
These are two. In fact, I've got three in total, one of which was quite a famous incident, which people remember only from a couple of seasons ago. And the thing that made me think about transfers in general is that we're entering the summer period. it's a word of warning. Anyone who downloads our podcast and is thinking of doing business in football this summer, listen up, because here's a few telling tales where it didn't go quite as people wanted. And the first one being the David De Gea Real Madrid case. Yes. And that was in the dying few minutes of the transfer window. This was in 2015-16, so not so long ago. Now, the problem with that deal is it was all going to plan. This is all way until the final few minutes. And Madrid's goalkeeper, Keylor Navas, was going to be coming in the other direction and David De Gea going to Real Madrid. Now, it was Navas's paperwork that was failed to be filed. So it was Madrid's fault. There was always that wrangling, wasn't it? Was it United? Madrid blamed United. United blamed Madrid. Well, according to SoccerX, where we did a podcast from this summer, they actually gave you all the details of what happened with this deal. And apparently the blame falls on Madrid's side because they didn't submit the file that they needed because Navas's paperwork had to meet the Spanish transfer deadline. And it didn't. So it didn't go there in enough time, basically. So it's another case of an email not being sent or a click not being done or whatever it was, not reaching its desired target. And then ever since, De Gea stayed put and seems quite content in Manchester.
But that was one of those cases, wasn't it, Lindsay Haley, where people were having a go at Manchester United and having a go at Real Madrid for not getting it done in time. And it's the age-old thing. Had both parties wanted the transfer enough, they should have talked earlier. It shouldn't have been left until the final day. I know it often is, but you have to be prepared to miss out on a few if it's the final hours of the final day.
And that wasn't the only one in that transfer window. There was another one. It was pretty much brushed under the carpet, and it was in Serie A. It was an Italian deal that didn't go through, but it pretty much a similar situation. It was an Italian domestic transfer, so it wasn't going from any country to other country, just within Italy. And it was Sampdoria's midfielder, Roberto Soriano, and he was meant to be going to Napoli. And what happened was the forms weren't filed again prior to the deadline. There's a little bit of a difference in Italy as well, and different clubs can have different stances. So Napoli, they require each player to sign an image rights license. And it was that held things up because they say every single player has to sign this piece of paperwork. And that contract didn't reach the Serie A league officials for ratification by the 11 p.m. deadline. So another case of something being missed. Now, that one eventually did go through, but there is a case of another one from 2013, which perhaps just takes the biscuit of the three. It was a Swiss midfielder, Pacim Kasami, and his transfer from Fulham to Pescara. And it didn't occur, and that was because of a failed internet connection. Nice. They tried to do it from an Italian hotel, and the hotel said, sorry, our Wi-Fi is down, and they couldn't put it through in time, the international clearance papers.
You'd just run to a cafe, wouldn't you? You know, one of those little, flipping it, one of those Western Union money transfer cafes. They always got computers in the back of those places. What are your oops or mishap moments there, Kate?
Well, a little bit of a mishap here for Jurgen Klopp, but he got a nice reaction in return. These are very small mishaps, but needless to say, still oops in communication stakes. This is when Chelsea were playing Liverpool back in January of this year. Now, Jurgen Klopp felt very much that his side, Liverpool, should have got a free kick in the build-up to them conceding a penalty against Chelsea. So he walked up to the fourth official, Neil Swarbrick, and said, "Nobody can beat us." And of course, he then said afterwards, actually, I know that that's not true. But in the heat of the game, you know, you can sort of often imagine how maybe the German translation doesn't quite work. And he just marched straight up to Neil Swarbrick and went, "Nobody can beat us," and had a real pop at him. Now, of course, he shouldn't be doing that because it's nothing to do with the fourth official. He shouldn't really be approaching him. When he realised his error, he did go back and apologise to Neil Swarbrick, who said very nicely, "No problem. I like your passion." How nice is that? So from a miscommunication to a happy ending, this one's a bit unfortunate. Sevilla, they had to apologise last year, ladies, after announcing a minute's silence for the wrong person.
What?
They told supporters to show their appreciation for Sanchez Marino rather than Enrique Gonzalez Marino. Wrong person. I've tried to find out Sanchez Marino. Is he still alive? And I think he might be. So they asked fans to show their appreciation for someone who is still alive and the wrong person.
That is bad. That is really bad. Well, I love the headline of this one. It was because obviously our story was inspired by St Mirren Burnley. A headline in a Scottish newspaper, Spew Dallas.
Oh, what?
Right? Andrew Williams He's a linesman.
Yeah.
Puked his guts out on the touchline during a game between Kilmarnock and Dundee. And he was, then the referee goes over to him. So he stood there.
Yacking up.
The game is held up because he stood there. His hand is on literally the yeah, the edge of the goalpost to keep himself up. And he's just hurling his guts up. And the keeper is just looking at him like, what are you doing, man? And the referee comes over. You think he's going to help him. He holds up a red card.
No.
Yeah, and sends him off. Obviously, you can't send...
comedic,
yeah,
was it?
You can't comedic really... Comedy. Yeah, because obviously he's not a player. But he did have to say, you're going to have to excuse yourself. Yeah. You're going to have to go. And he's held up play. So that was something that was a bit of an oops moment for Andrew McWilliams. And one more final oops moment. It's all about wearing the right outfit these days and not getting caught on camera with either SpongeBob SquarePants boxers or South Park socks, which I'm showing the girls now.
Oh, my goodness.
Rafa Benitez in the stands, obviously managing Newcastle, looking very serious there with his notes in his match day suit and his shiny polished Italian leather shoes with South Park socks on.
I'm trying to remember whether it was a tie.
It was
boxer shorts. In his autobiography, if you read it, there's an ongoing line about these comedy boxer shorts, and perhaps it's a SpongeBob SquarePants reference. And it was supposed to be Lucky, basically. His daughter had given them to him as a present, and it became a good luck token. Yeah.
That's nice.
Sue Smith's WSL Roundup.
Right, well, let's take you over to our lady in the know who's going to take you through what happened at the weekend. Sue Smith.
Hi, everyone. Here's my update of what's been happening in the world of women's football. It was the FA Cup final at Wembley on Saturday, and the growth and development of the game just continues to improve. There was over 35,000 people in attendance, which was a record crowd, and I'm sure many more watched it live on BBC Two as well. The final was between Manchester City and Birmingham. Looking at the run-up to the big match, it looked like it could have been quite an even game, Birmingham having knocked out both Arsenal and Chelsea on the route to the final. The pair then had to meet each other the week before in the spring series, and that finished 1-1. But the final was a completely different game. Man City were excellent in all departments, defended well for the majority of the game, and going forward, they looked like a real threat. Goals from Lucy Bronze, Izzy Christiansen, and World Player of the Year Carly Lloyd in the first half made it so difficult for Birmingham. But they did come out a different team in the second half, and they put out a much better display. Charlie Wellings actually pulled a goal back for them, but that was before Jill Scott scored the fourth for Manchester City, which completely killed the game off. A real dominant display from City, and they just showed how much quality they've got in abundance when the likes of Tony Duggan was on the bench and Jane Ross didn't even make the squad. Birmingham, I'm sure, will learn from this, and I'm sure they'll be a force to be reckoned with in the spring series. Okay, moving on to the spring series after that. Now we are completely in full swing. Lots of games are happening. And I've got to say, I've been really impressed with Liverpool. They've started well, scoring lots of goals and really taking the game to teams. Yeovil, on the other hand, are struggling, conceding far too many goals and haven't quite adapted to life in WSL1. They need to find a way to win games or at least just pick up points. It is difficult for them, as we know most of them are still pretty much part-time compared to a lot of the other teams who are now training full-time. So that is a big difference. Okay, that's all from me for now. I'll see you all soon.
Hi, I'm Jeff Stelling and you're listening to The Offside Rule. Three women talking about football. I'm used to listening to four old women talking about football on Saturday afternoons, so I'll definitely prefer this.
Right. Inspired by the good, the bad and the ugly, a theme that they have, don't they, on Radio X on a Saturday morning with the Johnny Vaughan and Gav, which I love, by the way. We've kind of nicked their topic, but we're not going to go through the ugly because that's just unfair. We've got the three of us instead with no makeup on, looking very different to how we normally do when we report and present. Only kidding, girls. So we're going to run you through the good and the bad of the football season so far. And thank you very much to everyone who helped me on Twitter because I was really struggling. There's been quite a lot of bad. I was trying to think of the good. Of course, there's lots of good, but when you're supposed to be impartial, I don't know. It depends who you support. So the first thing that came to my mind was just Bob Bradley. That was the bad. That was a bad appointment, wasn't it? The poor guy. I feel sorry for him. But yeah, no American is going to come here and have it easy ever again. That's if we ever appoint an American again. He's ruined it for everyone, hasn't he?
He definitely wasn't. Big bad Bob Bradley. He definitely wasn't Big Bob Bad. Big bad Bob, even.
Big bad Bob.
Big bad Bob Bradley.
Oh, dear. Anyway, go on, Linz.
One of the standouts, I don't know whether it falls into the good camp or the bad camp. I would say it's a bad camp. But then they went on to do pretty well without him. But Claudio Ranieri being sacked, managed to get Leicester to the Champions last season.
Well, I suppose you could caveat that with, that was bad, but what a surprise story Craig Shakespeare has been.
So yeah, Craig Shakespeare perhaps comes into the good and would say that the sacking of Ranieri was bad. Yes. I mean, I don't think anyone would disagree with that. And I just feel sorry for the fact that he didn't get to see the whole of the Champions League campaign through because that's another good. No, the good is that Leicester City were our best performing team in the Champions League this season and got to the quarterfinals.
And were very unlucky, really, not to get to the semi-finals. They were nearly there. I mean, it nearly happened.
So there's just been a few goods and bads just with Leicester City alone.
Yeah, and Sam Allardyce actually started off bad, didn't it? You wondered where his career was going to go after the whole England debacle. Mm. And look how he's come good with Crystal Palace.
Pep Guardiola. What do we do?
Jury's out.
Well, I've got one of my stories that I never thought I'd read this season, as him saying it was a beautiful moment in his career, one of the most beautiful moments of his career, drawing against Liverpool. So it was a really odd, bizarre thing to say. And when you're writing his autobiography, you're not going to be dedicating a whole chapter to that, are you? I mean, it was one of the most beautiful moments of his career. So perhaps you should. But yeah, very odd thing to say.
I think I'm going to file that into my other category, which we'll come to off the back of this, which is my to be continued category, because at the moment we're recording this, we don't know whether Manchester City have finished in the top four or not. If they don't, I would say that Pep Guardiola goes into the bad category. If they do and they get Champions League football, I think he probably remains just about in the good books with the fans, but certainly hasn't had the impact that people thought that he would. Not when you talk about Conte, Antonio Conte, debut season in the Premier League, just like Pep, and he's a champion. He's a winner. Yes. He's got Chelsea to be champions again. He introduced a back three system, which everybody seems to be copying left, right and centre. He has really brought a new lease of life into the Premier League. It looks like he's going to stay. So at the moment, you'd say pretty good all round.
You certainly would. If we're talking top four, let's say Arsenal and the Wenger out brigade have never been stronger, have they, as they've been this season. But this time, there's more than just a small minority of Arsenal fans also saying Wenger out. So that's the difference for me.
Okay, right. So some of the good. Thanks to Christopher Chapman, he said, a shout out to the medical team at Millwall who saved a man's life in the game against Northampton Town. He suffered a cardiac arrest in the second half and they were quick to go into the stands and look after him. Wow. Yeah. So there you go.
I must jump in there and say as well, because we do see some bad things in football, but we see great reactions. And that was also the case. Ryan Mason, when he clashed heads with Gary Cahill. Ooh. And I mean, who knows for Ryan Mason, and what that means for his career now. I mean, it's looking like he'll be out of football for a very long time. Yeah. But how great that the medical staff that are at these football clubs that are on site react quickly, because that situation could have been a hell of a lot worse.
Yeah, it could. The rainbow that came up over White Hart Lane, of course, at the weekend. That was nice.
I have a friend, actually, as well, who went to the match, came back with a little piece of grass off the turf, which you expect a lot of fans to go and do. But also, I wonder how many people did this. He went and got an identical photo from 20 years ago in the same spot outside White Hart Lane, like one of his first matches. Yeah, and on the very last one. It's good, isn't it?
That's cute. Tim Shires, just in case anyone needs reminding, City 4-2 down in the 89th minute. Q, Tinian Brian. That's right, Brian Tinian, who steps up and scores a penalty. 4 minutes later, 5-4 up. So there we go. Another good from the season. The best thing about what happened this season, according to Michael Callender, Lincoln City's FA Cup run. He said the worst, Ryan Mason's injury. So he agrees with you there. Colin Jackson says, South Shields winning the league. Two cups already won. And another at Wembley on Sunday. Tom Dunn says, what about Bayern Munich? at the weekend, so the end of the season. Yeah. 4-2 down in the 82nd minute, finishes 5-4 to Bayern. So it's all about comebacks. Man United coming back from being 3-0 down against Spurs and winning 3-5.
That's to be continued. Yeah. Jose's season. You know, if you win the Europa League final and you get Champions League football, pretty good season. Yeah. But again,
If not. Yeah.
Also to be continued, Real Madrid and Barcelona as well. Who's going to come out on top? I think it's going to be Real Madrid. And they came back from being 3-1 down to Las Palmas to draw 3-3. That was a good moment for James Hill. And just good all round is Ronaldo and Messi again. Another season where they're both kind of just shining on that stage. Yeah. Another thing just to mention, did you know that Wayne Rooney is younger than Cristiano Ronaldo? Mental. Yeah. That is mental.
A couple of players. I'm going to just mention Jack Wilshere to be continued. But, you know, he was at Bournemouth. What happens next for Jack Wilshere in his career? And a good is the send off that John Terry's going to get. Legend at Chelsea Football Club. But to be continued, is he going to end his career with another good season, go somewhere else? Or is it going to be a bit of a flop?
Quick one from me. Women's FA Cup final. You've heard Sue talk about it. I was there. Over 35,000 fans turned out at Wembley for that. So definitely a high point.
You say about the good with that, but you'd also say good season Manchester City women. In fantastic season all round.
Flipping heck, celebrating City. Hey. But yeah, they did very well indeed. We're going to end on such a high. You're going to love this story. This is from Ant McKenna on Twitter. He said, "We took Alfie to Everton today to get him a new kit for his dad's funeral. When we got there, we were told there were no kids' kits left as a new kit launches in a few weeks and we would be best waiting. I explained we needed a blue shirt for his dad's funeral on Thursday. The girl who I was talking to said she would see if she could find anything suitable, a small lady shirt, for example." So, I mean, this is it's a really sad story, obviously. So then he carries on and said, "We went to look at the blue polo shirts and decided just to have one of those and see if we could put his name on the back. The girl came back with a white shirt in Alfie's size. She said it was the only kid's shirt left anywhere and she'd like Alfie to have it as a gift from them." She then asked Alfie if he'd like anything printed on it free of charge. They also wouldn't charge us for the printing on the blue shirt for the funeral either. We gave her the details. She suggested we come back in a bit. When we did, they'd also printed his dad's name on a scarf for Alfie. He said, "I would say I'm surprised at the amazing gestures from the staff, but I'm not. Everton are the people's club. What the girls did for us today was so touching. Alfie was chuffed to bits with his shirt and the scarf for his dad. Absolutely love our club and everyone associated with it." What a lovely, lovely thing. And wishing little Bradley Lowry the best as well. Obviously, he's suffering from a terminal illness, and Sunderland have done great things to make sure they raise money to help with his treatment and the treatment of other youngsters as well in the Northeast and anyone else who's suffering. And in that game as well, obviously Sunderland Swansea players all playing for the fans, all 3,000 tickets, weren't they, at that game, and proceeds as well from the match day programme, and Swansea agreeing that would go to the Bradley Lowry Trust and for any other young kids as well who are suffering. So there's a lot of good in football, isn't there, that's not just on the pitch.
Yeah, sometimes it's good to highlight what happens off the pitch and what clubs do, because obviously it's a huge multi-million pound industry, and it's hard sometimes, it's too easy, isn't it, to kind of criticize your club. But yeah, two really nice stories there.
The Offside Rule, We Get It, with Lindsay Hooper, Hayley McQueen and Kate Borsay.
So as we know, girls, relegation is tough to take. I've cried a few tears over Middlesbrough going down, and Jeff Stelling as well, live on air, had to report on Hartlepool dropping out of the Football League. It's pretty tough to take. But on Mumsnet, there was a thread, and Tinfoil Hattie put at the top of the thread, "Pictures on the news of football fans, Blackburn, Blackpool, something like that, crying because their team has gone down from Division 2 to Division 3. I mean, seriously." And then it's AIBU.
Am I being unreasonable
to want to tell them all to get a fecking life? That's hilarious. This is very funny, isn't it, Kate?
So I was like outraged of South East London when I saw that, as well as sort of laughing at her ignorance. And it's quite interesting how Mumsnet fans reacted as well. Someone here says, YABU, you are being unreasonable. I'm still in therapy from Euro 96. Still can't forgive Gareth Southgate, they say. Someone else here said, you are not being unreasonable, agrees another poster here. People who get that involved in sport either need something worthwhile in their lives or they're just a bit thick. What? Someone could explain to them that the team will actually play again next year and the year after and on forever, but they probably wouldn't get it. It means absolutely nothing in the grand scheme of things. Lots of support for football. And someone here saying, one of the happiest memories I have of my nan when she was alive was her crying with joy at her team winning the playoffs to be promoted to the Premier League. It was her hometown club and she and her sister were hugging and crying. She loved football and snooker. Sport made her feel a part of something. I remember admiring her passion. There you go. So that's people getting it on Mumsnet and then not getting it on Mumsnet.
Yeah. What about a Dundee fan who celebrated Dundee United's relegation by getting the goal hero's name tattooed on his bum? So he is gloating about the relegation of his biggest rivals. He was a diehard on holiday in Tenerife. He got a tattoo of Craig Whiting's name inked on his bottom with a little arrow pointing down. I won't read the rest of it. It's just very strange. And yeah, there we go. So he has a football player's name on his arse. How does he explain that to his missus?
I have to say, I'm not spending as much time on Twitter nowadays as I used to. I've lost a little bit of interest. I don't know. It's just something else to do. But there are a few days of the year that I won't miss going on there. And one of them would be on the final day of the football season. I love seeing fans' reactions to results. And sometimes it's joyous. And other times there are more extreme reactions. You think about fans and them maybe having, if your team's relegated, you might want to have a bit of a rant. You might say all the things that we're expecting. And then a couple of fans will just take you by surprise. I like the wanting to just sit on the fence and abstain line that this fan took. Two relegations for Newcastle United. So this is last season in eight seasons. Two relegations for Newcastle in eight seasons. So everyone's furious with Ashley when that happens. Sort of forgotten now that they're going back up. But back then, this time last summer, it was, when it happened last time, I was gutted. This time, I feel nothing. That's weird. I never expected that. So that's one Newcastle fan.
I think he's just completely wrung out, bless him.
Yeah, and I think that's a trying time. And then another example, which I saw on the day that Blackburn got relegated. So it wasn't the very end of the season, but when their relegation was confirmed. And a fan tweeted, "The Venkies have turned Blackburn Rovers into a laughing stock, or is that chicken stock?" And it made me laugh.
Yeah. We all get Lindsay's sense of humour, don't we? What about Jodie and Lescott last season after Villa were relegated? Didn't really make any friends with the Villa fans after he said on Twitter, or said somewhere, that their relegation was a weight off the shoulders. There we go. Well done, Jodie. I'm glad you're feeling better about it. And there was a study, ladies, responses of football fans to relegation of their team, PTS, post-traumatic stress disorder. So this was a study that was done by two chaps, Philip Baynard and Mark Shelvin, in 2001 to look at the psychological consequences of relegation. And throughout this study, I had a quick skim through. I had to read it. It didn't give me a conclusion. I had to read the whole thing this morning. It basically said this: psychological consequences of relegation can be significant. Responses to relegation are similar to those reported for events involving physical threats and natural disasters. So in other words, experiencing relegation is akin to those things happening in your life, apparently more so than firefighters. So it's more stressful, more traumatic than being a firefighter. Apparently it can lead to sickness from work, reduced productivity. So it's actually like a sickness. They couldn't quite decide whether it was post-traumatic stress disorder like or not. But what they did say is that of their survey of people done, 51% recorded significant psychological consequences and 11% reported severe psychological consequences. Relegation. It's a dangerous thing.
The Northeast is screwed, isn't it?
I mean, there's going to be a few issues up there now.
I had a bit of stick on Twitter as well because I had said at the end of the game, Sunderland, I was comparing and contrasting the scenes at the Riverside in the final game there in the Premier League with fans who actually stayed to applaud the players that had put the work in. And the Sunderland fans, there was about 10 of them left. Not many had stayed. And I had said, well, you just look at the contrast in the two teams. I can understand the Middlesbrough fans, obviously they would have wanted to have stayed in the Premier League a little bit longer, but they enjoyed their time there anyway. Whereas Sunderland fans, maybe they just didn't expect it, but they got lucky the last few seasons. Yeah. They got lucky.
They've had enough hints. They've had about seven seasons.
But they were so angry with me for implying that I thought that they should have maybe stayed and applauded the players that had put the effort in there. You know, Jermaine Defoe, who's going to be leaving, he walked and did a lap of the pitch and applauded the empty seats. Pickford as well, who's not going to be there. Mm. But anyway, I get how brutal football can be when you're spending your hard-earned money to follow your team and you're dedicating all that time and spending time away from your family and friends every single weekend as other girls and guys do, going to football every week, and then you're putting the effort in and your team just isn't putting the effort in, and then before you know it you're having to follow your side in the Championship, or maybe you just go and support another team. Well, there we go. That's rounding everything up on this Offside Rule podcast. We'll be back for a season-ending special in around about a week's time, so listen out for that. But thank you very much again for downloading. Head to the website for a blog, stories, features, everything like that, Offside Rule podcast. And you can find us on Twitter as well at Offside Rule Pod. Bye, girls.
Bye.
The female take on football.